are on air for Fanfaration Radio. This is Thursday, April the 25th, and we're here to give you our Dover NASCAR weekend preview and Hot Topic sound off. Joining me for today's show is our co-host, Brian Eberle. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Sharon. Happy Thursday. How's it going today?
It's going pretty well. Thank you. All right. We're going to start off giving everybody the short track news and upcoming races, as well as an ARCA West update. And then we're going to preview the ARCA Menards Series and the ARCA East race out at Dover. Next, we'll give an update on the NASCAR Truck Series and some fantasy preview information. And afterward, we are going to preview the NASCAR Xfinity and Cup Series races out at Dover Motor Speedway. Of course, we end our episode with our Hot Topic sound-off discussion, and it looks like it might be just you and I today. So with that, let's go ahead. All right. With that, let's go ahead and get into our short track news here. We'll start off with the dirt.
Yeah, great. So with the dirt, we've got some fun and excitement coming up this weekend, a series I always love to follow. The USAC National Midgets are kicking off their season at Kokomo in Indiana, racing both Friday and Saturday night. They've got a 30-race schedule on tap this year with 14 full-time drivers trying to take on the championship. And we'll kind of run through it. Just a couple of key names here I think that are worth calling out. Logan Seavey, obviously, number one a year ago, and this year he wants to go back-to-back and repeat. 22 consecutive top 10 finishes for Seavey, which is just one shy of surpassing Jason Leffler's 1997 series record. So Seavey will be looking to do that this weekend when that series hits Kokomo and running the Abacus Racing number 57 car. Justin Grant will be back behind the wheel of the RMS Racing number 2. He finished second in the USAC National Midget Point standing this year, and his RMS Racing team has pared their stable down to just one full-time entry this year, so a little bit more focus maybe on Grant's car there. It'll give him what he needs to take down Seavey and the rest of the field. I'm sure you want to like flip-flop off, and you want to go through a few drivers. You want me to keep rolling?
No, you can keep going.
Yep, great. I got Ryan Timms will be driving the Keith Coons Motorsports number 67. 2023 season for him was his busiest and most successful. He won three times, Belleville, Lawrenceburg, and Angel Park, and finished fourth in the series standings. Kind of the crazy thing about Timms, he's just 17 years old, but he's entering his fourth year already in the USAC National Midgets, and he wants to set his sights on a championship this year. It'll be his second season running that full-time, and he'll be running the number 67 for the infamous Keith Coons Motorsports. And Dazen Pursley will be behind the wheel of the number 86 for Chad Boat. Pursley's already taken a Chad Boat midget on a fascinating alphabet soup run back in the Chili Bowl, where he ran from the D all the way up to the A and then charged from 20th to 4th in that A main, picking up a total of 45 positions on Saturday at the Chili Bowl, which is damn right impressive with all the big names and fantastic drivers they have down there. So Pursley looking to make some noise this year in the CB industry is number 86. So those are kind of your four top drivers of the 14 running full-time. Run through the other names here just super quick. I got Jacob Denny in the Tom Malloy number 25. Gavin Miller will be behind another Keith Coons Motorsports entry in the number 97 car. Cannon McIntosh, which has made some name for himself a couple years in a row now at the Chili Bowl with great runs, will be behind the Keith Coons number 71K. He's already won for Keith Coons this year and is looking to take home his first USAC National Championship. Jake Andriotti will be running the Kings Racing number 14 car. Matt Westfall in the Kings Racing number 54. Hayden Reinenbold will be running for Reinenbold Underwood Motorsports in the number 19 AZ. Kevin Thomas Jr. will be with Mount Stout Motorsports, sorry about that, number 9 car. Zach Dom in the Ramco Speed Group number 7P. Kyle Jones in the Joyner Motorsports number 27K. Zach Wiggle in the CB Industries number 89, and rounding out those 14 drivers running full time, Ashton Torgerson in the Keith Coons Motorsports number 67K. So we've got some great drivers there ready to contend for some top teams with Keith Coons and CB Industries, and should be a fun season with the USAC National Midgets get kicked off this Friday and Saturday night at Kokomo Speedway in Indiana.
All right. Sounds like it's going to be fun. All right, on the short track side, we've got a little bit of a controversy. The engine builder Redline Performance Engines has shared his side of a controversy to the Northeast Classic. Jeff Brown writes about it over at Short Track Scene. So, excuse me, this week he shared his side of the story, pledging to move forward and seek reinstatement in ACT's approved engine builder program. And so he is the disbarred builder of Jesse Switzer's disqualified engine from last week's American Canadian tour in the Northeast Classic, and he's issued a public statement about sanctions that were handed down to him. He took accountability for the situation on Facebook in a post that he shared on Saturday. Switzer took the checkered flag last Sunday in ACT's late model tour lid lifter, but the victory was actually later rescinded on Thursday after results of that off-site engine inspection of three of the top five finishers. ACT cited multiple infractions on Switzer's crate engine, relegating the 2023 Midsummer Classic 250, the winner there, to last place in the field. They also took an additional measure of levying sanctions against Redline, one of the 10 engine builders in the United States and Canada approved to maintain and seal crate engines for ACT competition. Redline was delisted from the program with an opportunity to reapply for reinstatement in April of 2025. So Robbins, who owns the Hollowell M engine shop, shared the following post on Facebook Saturday evening, and he said, earlier this week, after a technical inspection of an engine that we had sealed, the ACT Tour made the decision to suspend Redline Performance Engines as an approved engine builder for the next calendar year. The ACT Tour management contacted us with their findings, and frankly, we had no choice. He says, how did this happen? This particular engine was not our build, but we did seal it 4 years ago for a prior owner. There were some parts that were out of stock that we should have caught, and we often do catch, but this one got by us. We offer no excuse, but it was a simple oversight that caused a serious infraction. He goes on to apologize to the Switzer race team as they were completely unaware of what was inside the engine that they purchased when they purchased it. They were simply victims of our mistake. Their professionalism during this situation is a testament to their class, and we will make sure they have a legal engine for their next race. So a very unfortunate situation there, with somebody who had a really good race but and had no knowledge of what was going on. But I applaud the engine builders for taking accountability in this particular case.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I really like the statement that they came out with. Hey, you know what? Yeah, we should have caught that, right? We didn't do it, but we should have caught it in our inspection, in our process. We're going to figure out how to be better and not to let that happen again, and we're going to do what we got to do to be reinstated. No trying to skirt around it. No, you know, PR worded statement. Hey, we messed up. Bam. We're going to fix it. We're going to be better next time. So I do like that.
Okay. And then also Ty Majeski dominated in the super late model season opener. You can read about that over at Racing America. And Matt Hirschman powers to a win in the ROC modified series opener at Mahoning. So a couple of stories that you can read about over at Short Track Scene. I'm sorry, over at Racing America. And then
I was fortunate enough to be at Slinger on Sunday. So that was a beautiful day, beautiful weather, another dominating Ty Majeski performance. He won by over 6 seconds at a track where they turn laps in like 11 seconds, so 11, 12 seconds. So really stout performance from Ty, but a fun day out at the racetrack for sure.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Ty Majeski is from that area, so this is a chance for him to kind of go back to his roots and have some success. And I was really happy to see him win that race. Now, there are some upcoming races that you can watch over at Racing America, and they have the schedule up over there, but there's a couple of here that we want to highlight. Brian.
Yeah, for sure. So we got a little a little doubleheader action at Five Flags and Mobile International Speedway this weekend. 25 cars are going to compete in the Southern Super Series over the course of the weekend. They'll be at Five Flags Speedway on Friday before heading on over to Mobile International Speedway for Saturday. Got some very well-known names across super late model racing on the entry list for this weekend. Casey Roderick, he's got the points lead. Bubba Pollard, Cole Butcher, Matt Craig have won Southern Super Series races so far in 2024 and are going to look to add to their trophy collection this weekend. A guy that went out and won an ARCA last weekend, Jake Finch, he won at Talladega in the ARCA race. He'll be back behind the wheel of the Phoenix Racing super late model this weekend. And then, of course, Stephen Nassi. He's got 11 career Super Southern Series wins. Jeremy Doss is in the field as well. And with an off weekend of the Truck Series, Jake Garcia is going to climb behind the wheel of the super late model for that doubleheader weekend. He has 2 wins and 3 podium finishes and 4 Southern Super Series starts last year. That racing will begin at 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern at Five Flags Speedway on Friday night. And they will also have Pure Stocks and Crown Stocks on track. And then on Saturday, that program begins at 7 Central, 8 Eastern with Pro Truck, Sportsman, and Pure Stocks joining the card alongside the Southern Super Series. So some good racing going on there this weekend down in the south between Five Flags and Mobile International Speedway. And then we've got a couple of Cup guys going to throw their hat in the ring coming up in July. Both Kyle Busch and Daniel Hemric are going to be in the July 2nd and 3rd weekend at Oxford Plains Speedway. Hemric announcing this week that he's going to go out and run that race and join Kyle Busch. Hemric, of course, the 2021 Xfinity Series champion, I'm currently driving the number 31 Cup car, and he's excited to get back out to Oxford Plains Speedway. It's been about 10 years, I said, since he's run a race there, but I showed a lot of speed back then and great addition to that race. So both Kyle Busch and Daniel Hemric probably bringing a few more people out to the track at Oxford Plains Speedway coming up in July.
And then Brandon Jones, he's in the Xfinity Series with Junior Motorsports. He's reuniting with Hawk McCall for the Cars Tour entry. This is kind of cool because he's going to run 3 Cars Tour events this year with Hawk McCall Motorsports. And he's raced with them for a number of years before moving up into NASCAR's Xfinity Series. In fact, 12 years after their original pairing. So it's really cool to see Brandon Jones going back to his roots as well and racing with the Hawk McCall Motorsports team in the Z-Mac Cars Tour late model series. As far as the races, let's see. I'm trying to see which of the 3 races he's going to race this week. Or not this week, but okay, here it is. He is going to race at it's a Chevy Camaro at Ace Speedway on May the 3rd. He'll return to the Cars Tour at North Wilkesboro Speedway on May 15th and again at Hickory Motor Speedway on July 27th. So I think those are great opportunities for Brandon Jones, and I think it's really cool to see him going back to his roots with that racing organization.
I would agree with that. I feel like we keep seeing that a little bit more and more from some of these drivers. Obviously, a very busy schedule once you get up to the higher ranks in the Xfinity and Cup Series. But guys like Kyle Busch and Hemric and Brandon Jones continue to find ways to be able to dip down and go back and kind of give back to their short tracks and their roots and where they came from. So awesome to see.
Absolutely. All right. It's time for us to move on to the ARCA Menards Series. The ARCA West is not racing this particular weekend, but they will be racing upcoming. Let me see if I can get that information here. The ARCA West will be racing May 31st at 8 p.m. Eastern Time out at Portland International Raceway, and it will be covered via Flow Racing. So we'll give you more details as we get closer to that date, but I want to make sure everybody knows when that next race is for the ARCA West. This weekend, Brian, I'm excited to say that we've got one of those combined events where the ARCA Menards Series and the ARCA East are racing together, the General Tire 150 at Dover Motor Speedway on Friday. That's tomorrow, April the 26th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1, and radio coverage is available on MRN Radio. It's a one-mile track, so they'll race 150 laps to cover 150 miles.
Yeah, and that will be the fourth of 20 races for the ARCA Menards Series this season and the second race on the ARCA Menards Series East schedule. For people that might be a little bit confused by the two series run together, that race will pay full points to both series, and the winner will earn a victory in both series as well. So something they've been doing for the last several years now, I feel like, so it's getting a little bit more routine. The General Tire 150 will actually be the first ARCA Menards Series race at Dover, but it will be the 34th time that the ARCA Menards Series East has run at the track, dating back to 1987. It used to be the K&N Pro Series and stuff back then. So the 34th time for them to run there. A host of different winners have gone to East Series Victory Lane at Dover. You want to run through some of those names, Sharon? Some definitely familiar ones to us.
Sure. Sure. There's some familiar names here if you've been following NASCAR. Starting off with Jimmy Spencer, who had a win there in 1998. Dale Shaw in 2001. Matt Kobielak in 2002. Dale Quarterly in 2004. Andy Santerre in 2005. Tim Andrews in 2006. Sean Casey in 2007. Eric Almirola in 2008, Brett Moffitt in 2009, and again in 2010, Bubba Wallace in 2011, Corey LaJoie in 2012, Austin Hill two times in 13 and 14, Chase Cabray in 15, Kyle Benjamin in 16, Harrison Burton 17, Ruben Garcia Jr. in 18, Sam Mayer twice in 19 and 20, Ty Gibbs in 21, Taylor Gray in 22, and Jake Finch just last year. So there's a possibility Jake Finch could go back-to-back. We'll have to wait and see what happens there. Only three drivers have ever won more than one ARCA Menards Series race at Dover, and we covered all three of those drivers with Moffitt, Hill, and Mayer. The East races from 1987 through 1992 were run in combination in what is now the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Now, drivers who won those races include some other familiar names like Mark Martin, Rick Mast, Bobby Hillen Jr., Michael Waltrip, Rick Wilson, Ken Schrader, Harry Gant, Robert Presley, but they were not credited with an East victory. So some interesting names show up on all of those lists, and it's kind of fun to hear their names again.
Yeah, a really good host there with Mark Martin, Ken Schrader, definitely some drivers that I kind of grew up with in my early NASCAR fandom days, so pretty cool to see there. And so we're heading to Dover this weekend, one of two tracks with a concrete racing service, so a little bit different than used to week after week. It'll be the 20th race on concrete for the ARCA Menards Series and the 37th race on the concrete for the ARCA Menards Series East. Taking a quick look at the point standings, Christian Rose enters this weekend with a one-point lead in the ARCA Menards Series championship standings over Greg Van Alst, and Gio Ruggiero, who won the ARCA Menards Series opener at Five Flags earlier this year, has a two-point advantage over the reigning series champ in the East, William Swalowicz. Got a couple of drivers on the entry list that are coming to Dover fresh off victories elsewhere in motorsports. Brett Cruz, who won last year's ARCA race at Springfield, makes his first ARCA Menards Series appearance in Salem last fall. Cruz won the Z-Max Cars Tour late model stock car race at Orange County Speedway on Saturday, and Gio Ruggiero, who won the East Opener at Five Flags, won the TA2 race out at Sonoma Raceway on Sunday. So a couple drivers there that are familiar with Victory Lane recently on the entry list this weekend. And Sharon, I'll hand it back over to you to talk a little bit about the qualifying records and kind of what we're looking at for race procedures for the weekend.
All right. Taylor Gray holds the ARCA East qualifying record at Dover that was set back in 2022 at 22.372 seconds and 160.915 miles per hour. Sam Mayer, on the other hand, holds the ARCA Menards Series East record at Dover set in 2019, and that was at 154.407 miles per hour and 58 minutes and 52 seconds. There also is going to be a scheduled caution at or near lap 75. Teams will have 5 minutes to perform routine service, including tire changes, fueling, and chassis adjustments. Teams are not permitted to change tires and add fuel, though, simultaneously. The break is the only time the teams can make a scheduled tire change without penalty. All other tire changes must be for a damaged tire and be approved by ARCA officials. Now, should the race need to be extended into overtime, there will be unlimited attempts at a two-lap green-white checkered finish. Should the caution be displayed after the white flag, there will be unlimited attempts at a one-lap green and white together finish. So we always like to make sure that folks know that what to expect in these races, because it is a little bit different than what we see in some of the other races that we watch.
And how crazy was it that we saw a caution pre-race at Talladega last weekend for ARCA? That was definitely a shocker.
That was unusual, yes. Especially for a track like Talladega. Yeah, that would be nice. All right, Brian, let's go ahead and do some Fantasy Central information here, as well as our DraftKings odds. And I'm going to start with the Xfinity Series. There's quite a few drivers that have driver ratings over 100. And I'm going to start with... make this a little bit bigger so I can see it. I'm going to start with Brandon Jones at 107. His average finish at the track is 7.5. Just above him is Austin Hill at 101.5 with an average finish at 9.0. Then it's Cole Custer with an average finish of 7.0. His average rating, though, jumps up to 108.6. At 109.1 is A.J. Allmendinger with an average finish of 6.0. Then it goes to Ty Gibbs, who has an amazing average finish of 3.0. Just one race in the books, but his driver rating with that race is 117.9. In the number two spot is Justin Allgaier at 2.5 average finish. I'm sorry, yeah, that's right, 2.5 average finish, and his driver rating is 123.3, and with a perfect driver rating with one race is Ryan Truex at 150, and, of course, his average finish is 1.0 with that one race. Now, we do have a few drivers that don't have a driver rating of 100 or higher, but they have average finishes that are pretty darn good. We'll start with Sammy Mayer at 6.0. Sammy Smith at 6.0. And it is Sam Mayer at 7.0 and Sheldon Creed at 9.5. So they might be a little bit of a long shot, but I'm curious to hear what your DraftKings odds are for the Xfinity Series race.
Yeah, let's delve into those here real quick. So per the DraftKings Sportsbook, as of this morning for Saturday's Xfinity Series Bet Rivers 200, we've got Justin Allgaier coming in as the favorite, 3-1, series veteran. So he gets the edge there over young up-and-comer, maybe not as young anymore, but Chandler Smith, he's at plus 350. Cole Custer, which Sharon mentioned, with a great track record. At Dover is 5-1. Ryan Truex, a former winner at the track, at 6-1. Sam Mayer at 10-1. Austin Hill, 12-1. Both Sammy Smith, Riley Herbst, and A.J. Allmendinger, the three of those drivers, are all back there at 16-1. And then we have last week's winner at Talladega, Jesse Love, picking up his first Xfinity Series victory last weekend, 22-1. And former Truck Series champion Sheldon Creed at 25-1. And that kind of rounds out the top favorites, kind of in line with what Sharon mentioned there. I mean, I think I like kind of throwing a little bit on Sammy Smith back there at 16-1, maybe somebody a little different, but it is hard to bet against series veteran Justin Allgaier. He's been very good at Dover in the past and always able to kind of get it done at those little bit more difficult tracks like Dover with the concrete.
Exactly, a track where the veteran experience really means a lot. Okay, so let's take a look at the Cup Series now. I'm going to start with those drivers that have an average finish that is below the 10.0 mark, and I'll start with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. His average finish, he's not in the race, I don't think, this weekend for the Cup Series. I'm thinking Xfinity still. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. has an average finish at 8.5. Even though his rating is below 100. Also, Christopher Bell has an average finish at 5.0. His driver rating is below the 100 mark. And then Chris Buescher also has an average finish at 8.5, even though his driver rating is just a point below that 100 mark. Now, for the four drivers that are above the 100 mark, we'll start with Chase Elliott. He's at 107.6 with an average finish at 6.0. His teammate Alex Bowman has an average driver rating at 109.1 with an average finish at 5.0. Martin Truex Jr., his average finish is 6.5, but his driver rating is at 111.9. And the driver with the highest driver rating is Ross Chastain. His average finish, 2.5, and driver rating at 127.3. What do the odds tell us,
Mark? All right, so the DraftKings Sportsbook odds of this morning for Sunday's Sprint Cup or Cup Series worth 400. Sorry. Well, we got my numbers all mixed up there. Kyle Larson comes in as the favorite at plus 450. Yeah, it does. Over Martin Truex Jr., who's at 6-1. William Byron, who's already picked up a trio of victories this year at plus 750, along with both Ross Chastain and Denny Hamlin, also at plus 750. As Sharon noted, Ross got a pretty good track record at Dover, and been a little bit, I feel like, since we've seen him smash some watermelon, so he could definitely be a good pick for Sunday afternoon. Chase Elliott, who picked up a win here a couple weeks ago at 11-1. Ty Gibbs and Ryan Blaney together, both at 13-1. Alex Bowman at 16-1. And last week's winner, Tyler Reddick at 19-1, along with Kyle Busch, also at 19-1. And Joey Logano has been looking for victory lane again for quite some time now, back there at 20-1, along with Chris Buescher. And then we've got Brad Keselowski, Buescher's teammate, at 22-1, and Bubba Wallace at 30-1. So those are kind of your favorites heading in to Sunday afternoon. Hard to bet against Kyle Larson, I feel like. William Byron's also had a stellar season. Looking for somebody a little bit longer odds. I mean, Bowman's got to get something done here at some point, I feel like. He's been so quiet now for so long, too. So a lot of good drivers there and a lot of good opportunity for somebody to get something done and lock their spot in the playoffs this weekend.
Absolutely. All right, I'm looking forward to the race this weekend. We'll have to see what actually happens. We're going to go ahead and get into the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. They are not racing this weekend. It's the second week of their break, but they will be back next weekend for the Heart of America 200 out at Kansas Speedway. We do have some notes here that we'll go through. I feel like the notes are loaded this week.
That's good. Sometimes they're a little bit sparse, so it's always nice to have some good info and data to run through.
Mm-hmm. Well, three drivers we want to keep an eye on this that are entered this week at Dover, even though they're in the Craftsman Truck Series, they're racing other series, right?
Yeah, for sure. So we got a trio of those guys, Corey Heim, Daniel Dye, and Taylor Gray. And, of course, if you've missed that news, Eric Jones will be out this weekend, suffered a back injury last weekend in his wreck at Talladega. And Corey Heim has been tapped already heading into the season as kind of the Toyota backup driver. He's been doing a lot of sim work for Toyota as well. So he's going to get the call up and get to make his Cup Series debut this weekend. If you haven't seen it yet, he's going to be behind the wheel of a beautiful number 43 car there for Legacy Motor Club, a great-looking paint scheme. So I think that's really cool to see Heim get that opportunity. Unfortunately for Eric, he did post a video on his social channels earlier this week, seems to be in good spirits and doing well, but they don't really have a timeline on how long he'll be out. But Bob Pockers indicated on Twitter earlier today that it sounds like Heim will be that driver until Jones returns. Heim's also going to get double work this weekend because he's going to be behind the wheel once again of the number 26 Sam Hunt Racing Toyota in Saturday's Xfinity Series race as well. So not an off weekend for Heim, like his Truck Series competitors. He'll be quite busy trying to get a handle around Dover and having that added pressure of that inaugural Cup Series debut. Heim actually made his Xfinity Series debut at the Monster Mile last season, finished a disappointing 35th, so he's going to look to rebound from there. He does have 5 Xfinity Series starts this season, with the best finish of 4th at Richmond. Daniel Dye is going to attempt to make his Dover Motor Speedway debut this weekend in the Xfinity Series. He'll be driving for Colleague Racing in the number 10 Chevrolet. The 20-year-old driver has got 2 previous Xfinity Series starts this season, those coming at Daytona in Texas, where he finished back in the 20th, 27th, and 24th, respectively. And then Heim's teammate from the Truck Series, Taylor Gray, will be joining him in Xfinity Series competition, piloting that number 19 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. Gray has 4 previous starts this season in the Xfinity Series, those coming at Richmond, Martinsville, Texas, and Talladega. And he actually finished 3rd in his Xfinity Series debut at Richmond. So Corey Heim, Daniel Dye, and Taylor Gray, no off weekend for them this weekend, and the Truck Series is idle until Kansas. All 3 of those drivers will be in action in this weekend's Xfinity Series, and for Heim, also Cup Series races.
All right. Now, for that race at Kansas Speedway next week, so far in 7 races, there's been 5 different Truck Series winners. Nick Sanchez, Kyle Busch, Raja Carruth, at Christian Eckes and Corey Heim have all celebrated in Victory Lane this season. Busch and Eckes are 2-time winners of that group. Thor Sport Racing's Matt Crafton is looking for his first win of the season, and it could be on the horizon. The veteran driver has a vast majority of the records at Kansas Speedway. That includes the race record at 139.857 miles per hour. That was in May of 2015. The most races, 27. He's tied for the most wins with Kyle Busch at 3 and the most top fives at 7. His top tens come in at 14 and laps completed, 4,148. The driver of the 88 Thor Sport Racing Ford finished in 11th in the spring race last year. So of the 5 different winners this season, Sanchez, Carruth, Eckes, and Heim are the 4 that have earned their spot into the playoffs by the virtue of their wins. So Brian's going to go over the playoff prediction after Texas, their last race, and what that looks like after 7 races.
Yeah, so hard to believe we're already 7 races into the 23-race Camping World Truck Series season. Kind of crazy to think how quick it's already going by. We've got Christian Eckes locked in to the playoffs based on his 2 race wins. And then we also have Corey Heim, Nick Sanchez, and Raja Carruth have all 4 of those drivers have locked up their spots in the 10-driver playoff field. And currently, based on where they are in the point standings, we've got Ty Majeski, Taylor Gray, Tyler Ankrum, Matt Crafton, Tanner Gray, and Grant Enfinger rounding out the 10-driver playoff field if the playoffs were to start today. And then we've got a handful of drivers that are just slightly on that bubble outside, on the outside looking in. Daniel Dye in 11th, 5 points back of a playoff spot. Ben Rhodes in 12th, 6 points back of a playoff spot. Stuart Friesen in 13th, 17 points back. And both Bailey Curry and Jake Garcia just 24 points back. And taking a quick look at the playoff points so far that they've earned, Ekis has the lead there with 13. Heim and Sanchez both have 6 points. So they're off to a good start there to set them up well for success when we get the playoffs started later on this season. And Sharon's going to talk a little bit about where the Truck Series is headed next. They'll finally be back in action next weekend at Kansas.
Okay, yeah, we know that the Xfinity and the Cup Series are tackling the concrete oval at Dover this weekend, but the Craftsman Truck Series has that one more weekend off before they head to Kansas. They're going to be returning to competition under the lights at Kansas Speedway, which is kind of cool. The race doesn't start on May the 4th until 8 o'clock at night. And again, it will be televised on Fox Sports 1 with radio coverage on MRN and Sirius XM Radio. It's a 1.5-mile track, and they've hosted 27 Truck Series races since the inaugural truck event there on July 7th of 2001. And that was actually run by Ricky Hendrick, driving the number 17 Hendrick Motorsport Chevrolet. Now, it will be broken up into three stages. The first two stages are 30 laps each. The final stage, 74 laps, for a total of 134 laps to cover a distance of 201 miles. Now, practice will begin Saturday at 12:05 p.m. Eastern. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1, and there'll be radio coverage on Sirius XM NASCAR Radio. Qualifying will follow immediately afterward at 12:35 p.m. Eastern time. So just so you can mark your calendars and set your clocks for what's to come for the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. But there's somebody who's done quite well this year that we're going to talk about next.
Yeah, and that is none other than 23-year-old driver out of Middleton, New York, Christian Ekis. Based on his fourth-place finish at Texas, he took that point standings lead. That's just the third time in his career he's led the point standings. And even though we're only seven races into the season, we've definitely seen some changes at the top. We had Tyler Ankrum leading the points early on for several weeks, and Ty Majeski and Corey Heim have also taken their turns at the top of the point standings before Ekis, who is now just a mere 2 points ahead of Corey Heim in second and 12 points ahead of ThorSport Racing's Ty Majeski in third. Ekis will head to Kansas, where he's got one win, four top fives, and six top tens in eight Craftsman Truck Series starts. So very good performances there in the past, good track record for Ekis. And he's also the most recent winner at Kansas in the Truck Series. So looking up for that 23-year-old driver out of Middleton, New York, as they head down to the Midwest and Kansas Speedway next weekend.
All right. In case you haven't heard the news, Brett Moffitt is going to join Tricon Garage for a multi-race slate. He's the 2018 Craftsman Truck Series champion, and he's going to pilot the number one for Tricon Garage for multiple events this season. He's been a long-time Truck Series standout and will make his season debut at Kansas next week. He's currently slated to compete alongside veteran signal caller Seth Smith. And last year, Smith helped make history at Kansas, guiding Tony Breidinger to a top 15 finish, the best debut by a female in the series history. So he's lucky to have Seth Smith calling the shots there. Moffitt brings a lengthy and decorated Truck Series resume, as we all know, to Tricon. In his 93 career starts, hailing from Grimes, Iowa, he's tallied 13 victories, 40 top fives, 54 top tens, and over 1,230 laps led. Nearly half of all those victories came at speedways between 1 and 2 miles in length, including his victory at Kansas in October of 2020. So really good to see Brett Moffitt back behind the wheel of a truck coming up here.
Yeah, and another driver we will see behind the wheel at Kansas for the first time making this Craftsman Truck Series debut will be Connor Mozick. He's going to pilot that number 7 Spires Motorsports Chevrolet that has had various drivers behind the wheel already this season and been to victory lane with Kyle Busch. Mozick has inked a 5-race deal starting next weekend at Kansas and also Charlotte Motor Speedway at the end of May, Pocono in July, Kansas again when they come back next September, or in September, and Homestead Miami Speedway on October 26th. If you watched ARCA last year, you might be familiar with Mozick's name. He competed in 6 races with an average finish of 3.5 and went to victory lane in September at the 1.5-mile track. And he has 24 Xfinity Series appearances, with his best results coming at Watkins Glen, a 5th, and Portland Raceway, 8th. I'm running a lot of road course stuff, I feel like, in the past there in the Xfinity Series. So getting a chance to get started there and get some more oval experience under his belt, coming in with that number 7 Spire truck, good team already around him. And he has finished 19th, actually, earlier this year in the truck series, and had a solid 4th-place finish in ARCA competition back at Phoenix earlier this year as well. So been dabbling around in various series across motorsports so far this year for Connor.
Okay. We're a couple minutes ahead of schedule, but we'll get right into it. The NASCAR Xfinity Series is racing this weekend out at Dover Motor Speedway. They'll be racing Saturday, April the 27th at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1 starting at 12:30 Eastern Time, as well as radio coverage on PRN and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio. They will be racing 200 miles over 200 laps, and the first two stages are 45 laps apiece, with the final stage at 110 laps, and it will end on lap 200. So Ryan Sieg, he's kind of the man of the hour after doing well in Dash for Cash last week.
Yeah, he's got a little bit fatter bank account this week than he did last week. That's for sure. Despite losing a lap early on due to a flat tire, he was able to come back and finish first in the Dash for Cash competition, beating the other 3 competitors and taking home the extra 100 grand check at Talladega Super Speedway. You know, Sieg said this is a huge win for our team. It was a rough day at Talladega. He thought he had thrown it away, but they were lucky enough to get that caution at the end and come back and beat the 16 car. So it worked out and is, you know, pretty extraordinary for our small team, was his quote. With the Xfinity Series Dash for Cash win, he locks himself in to the final race of the Dash for Cash taking place this weekend. And the drivers eligible for that bonus will be Sieg, along with Jesse Love, Riley Herbst, and Anthony Alfredo. And of course, whichever of those 4 drivers finishes first, they take home that extra $100,000 check. A quick look at how those 4 drivers have fared in the past at Dover. Sieg in the number 39 Ford for his family team has 17 Xfinity Series starts at Dover with 3 top 10s and an average finish of 14.4. Jesse Love in the number 2 Richard Childress Racing Chevrolet, he'll be making his Xfinity Series debut at Dover this weekend, so first time there for him. Riley Herbst in the number 98 Stuart Haas Ford has 6 Xfinity Series starts at Dover with 3 top 10s and an average finish of 12.8. And Anthony Alfredo behind the wheel, the number 5 R Motorsports Chevrolet. 4 Xfinity Series starts at Dover in the past with a best finish of 11th and an average finish of 18.2. So you've got some rookie there in Jesse Love and 3 other drivers that haven't had great success at Dover. So it should be interesting to see which one of those 4 takes home the extra 100 grand coming up at the Monster Mile.
Yes, indeed. Another name for Dover Motor Speedway is the Monster Mile. And, again, they'll be racing this Saturday. Miles the Monster has hosted 77 Xfinity Series races, giving us 53 different race winners and 49 different pole winners. 8 races have been won from the pole or the first starting spot. Most recently, Kyle Larson did it back in 2017. But let's take a closer look at the record book. The driver with the most wins is Kyle Busch. No surprise there. He has 5 wins at Dover. The most poles, Harry Gant and Joey Logano, they both have 5 poles. Justin Allgaier and Matt Kenseth have 12 top fives. They're tied for that record. Justin Allgaier holds the sole record for most top tens at 16. Kyle Busch, of course, has led the most laps at 1,349. The most lead lap finishes is Justin Allgaier at 19. The race record, of course, is Joey Logano. He set that record in 2013 at 131.219 miles per hour. And in 2016, Eric Jones cracked the qualifying record at 158.318 miles per hour. Drivers are going to kick off the weekend on Friday, April the 26th, at 3 p.m., followed by qualifying at 3:30 p.m. Eastern, and it'll all be televised on Fox Sports 1. So who's going to conquer the Monster Mile this week?
Well, we've got 3 drivers that have done it before and been to victory lane with miles and hoping to do it again this weekend. Those are none other than series veteran Justin Allgaier, Stewart Haas Racing's Cole Custer, and Joe Gibbs Racing's Ryan Truex. Junior Motorsports' Justin Allgaier, series veteran, obviously, in the Xfinity Series, has a whopping 23 starts at the Monster Mile with 2 wins, those coming back in 2018 and 2020, 12 top fives, 16 top tens, and has led 514 laps, and makes sense why he is your DraftKings Sportsbook favorite heading into the weekend. Cole Custer has 7 starts at Dover with 1 win that came back in 2019 when he was running the series full-time, 4 top fives, 6 top tens, and has led 237 laps at the track. And Ryan Truex picked up his first career win at Dover last year. He has 7 prior starts at the track with that 1 win, 2 top fives, 4 top tens, and has led 167 laps at Dover in the past. I'll hand it back over to Sharon to talk a little bit about some of those other drivers that have recorded their first win at Dover, like Truex.
Yep, there's actually 14 drivers that has their first career Xfinity Series win at Dover, including, you just mentioned, Ryan Truex, who grabbed his first series win for Joe Gibbs Racing last year in the spring race. So I'm going to go back to 1982, and Joe Ruttman got his first Xfinity Series win in May of 82. Then it was Ricky Rudd in May of 83. Mark Martin did it in May of 1987. Rick Mast in September of 1987. Bobby Hillen Jr. in 1988, June. Michael Waltrip did it in September of 88. Ken Schrader in September of 89. Todd Bodine in June of 1991. Mike Wallace in June of 1994. Johnny Benson did it in September of 1994. Mike McLaughlin did it in June of 1995. Joe Bessie in September of 1997, Scott Wimmer in September of 2002, and as we mentioned earlier, Ryan Truex, the most recent driver to get his first Xfinity Series win, and that was last spring of 2023. There are 23 drivers in the field that are still looking to post their first win in the Xfinity Series, so I'll go over the list of those drivers. We'll start with Dawson Cram, Anthony Alfredo, Garrett Smithley, Daniel Dye, Josh Williams, Haley Deegan, Sheldon Creed, Taylor Gray, Corey Heim, Kyle Sieg, Lane Perkins, Matt DiBenedetto, Ryan Sieg, Leland Honeyman, Ryan Ellis, Brennan Poole, Parker Kligerman, Carson Quapel, Kyle Weatherman, Caden Honeycutt, Shane Van Gisbergen, Patrick Emmerling, and David Starr, all in the race this weekend looking for their first Xfinity Series win. So, Brian, let's give a Sunoco rookie update.
Yeah, so we've got trio, not a trio driver. We got five drivers eligible for the Sunoco Rookie of the Year Award, currently being led by Richard Childress Racing's Jesse Love. Love, of course, scored that victory last week at Talladega, coming in just his ninth Xfinity Series start. That's kind of giving him a little bit of a buffer here in the point series standings. He's got 316 points, and the only driver in the rookies class that has locked himself into the playoffs. Colleague Racing Shane Van Ginsburg sits second in the rookie standings, back with 194 points. So he's already a whopping 122 points behind Love, so a little bit of work there if SGVG wants to take home the Rookie of the Year. Leland Honeyman is in third, followed by Haley Deegan and Dawson Cram to round out the NASCAR Xfinity Series rookie standings heading into this weekend's event.
All right. We're about 9 minutes ahead of schedule now, but we're going to go ahead and get into the NASCAR Cup Series, and I think we're going to need every minute, Brian. The Worth 400 at Dover Motor Speedway will take place this Sunday, April the 28th, at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1, and they'll start their pre-race coverage at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, along with radio coverage on PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing 400 miles over those 400 laps. The first stage is 120 laps. The next stage, that will end on lap 120. The next stage is 130 laps, ending on lap 250. And then the final stage will be 150 laps, ending on the last lap, lap 400. But before we get into all of that, they've announced the race format for the All-Star Race at North Wilkesboro, Brian.
Yeah, so some kind of big news this week coming out, something different for sure when it comes to the format, or I guess the tires, really, not necessarily the format. So as we all know, the All-Star Race is going to return to North Wilkesboro for the second straight year, and it's going to have that same simplified format with two heat races to set the All-Star Race starting lineup, 100-lap All-Star Open, and the 200-lap main event. And while the format of the race will be the same, there's several new features, mainly centering around this new tire strategy element that we'll dive into here a little bit, a new qualifying / pit crew challenge format and pitting requirements to kind of spotlight the sport at the newly repaved North Wilkesboro Speedway. So kind of that signature new element that they announced this week centers around the tire type and allotment, and something definitely different for the Cup Series. There's potentially three different tires that can be utilized throughout the race. So they're going to have a prime tire, which is the baseline tire that they assessed last month in a Goodyear tire test there, an option tire, which is still a slick tire, but made with the same rubber as a wet weather tire, which makes it softer and gives it a little bit more grip, but it's also going to wear out a lot faster. And then there's also a wet weather tire that they could potentially use if the track is wet to be able to tell the difference between all those tires when they're on the cars. That lettering that says Goodyear Eagle around it will be yellow for those prime tires, red on the option tires, and white on the wet weather tires. So a little bit more kind of specific on the tires here, because that is definitely going to be kind of the center of attention, and I think it's kind of a unique opportunity for them to test this under race conditions and formats. So teams are going to give 9 sets of tires for the weekend. That's for practice, qualifying, heat races, and the open, and that will be broken down between 3 sets of prime tires and 2 sets of option tires for practice. For the All-Star Race, the teams will have 2 sets each of the prime tires and the option tires. All 4 tires on the car must be the same at all times. Only the prime tire will be used for qualifying, and for practice, the heat races and the All-Star Open, teams will have the option to start on any type of tire, and all teams will start on the option tire for the All-Star Race. Now, sounds like a lot to take in and maybe a little bit confusing to understand, but I think at the end of the day, we'll let the teams worry about that, and hopefully the tires will lead to some better racing, some better tire wear, and maybe help a little bit on the short tracks. Obviously, that's been the struggle this year, and they've talked a lot about the tire, and they're going to use this as an opportunity to, you know, test that and see what that does. Got a little quote here from John Probst, NASCAR Senior VP and Chief Racing Development Officer, After a successful return to North Wilkesboro last season, we are thrilled to bring the action back to one of NASCAR's most iconic and storied tracks. The spotlight will certainly be on the crew chiefs and drivers as they plan their tire strategy for this special race. In testing, those softer tires were significantly faster, but wore out much quicker. Goodyear has been an incredible partner in this all-star element, and it will be fascinating to watch how crew chiefs and drivers manage this unique challenge. So really interesting there. I'm sure we'll delve into it even a little bit more in Hot Topics, but that's a pretty cool element and definitely going to make it different. And the word tire will definitely be, as we joke, the drinking word of the day, I think, when it comes to the all-star race. So break into a little bit more kind of format here and how that'll break down here in the month of May. The all-star race itself will be 200 laps with two all-star cautions, as they call them, at lap 100 and lap 150. The lap 100 break, teams must do a four-tire stop using any tire they're choosing. All laps, caution and green flag will count, and NASCAR regular overtime rules will be in effect. Now, the All-Star Open will take place before the All-Star Race. That gives drivers who have not earned a spot already in the All-Star Race their chance to race in. That race will be 100 laps and have an All-Star caution at lap 50, at which time teams must also perform a four-tire stop. At the end, three open drivers will advance to the All-Star Race, the top two finishers and the fan vote winner. So same procedure there as we had last year. This is quite the long note we've got going on here on the All-Star Race, that's for sure. All-Star Weekend festivities will begin on Friday evening with All-Star Open Qualifying and the All-Star Qualifying / Pit Crew Challenge. So that's also a little bit new. While last season's qualifying was based solely on results of the Pit Crew Challenge, this season we'll combine the traditional qualifying effort with the Pit Crew Challenge element. Drivers will take a green flag, run one full lap at speed, and on the second lap, proceed to one of two NASCAR-designated pit stalls to complete a four-tire stop with mock fuel delivery. When the pit stop's complete, the cars will exit pit road and race back to the checkered flag. That qualifying time will be the total laps time from when they take the green to the checkered, and the pole sitter will start on the pole for Heat Race 1 and the All-Star Race. And now that pit crew with the fastest stop during the All-Star qualifying attempt that does not have any penalties will win the pit crew challenge. Timing lines are established one box behind and one box ahead of the NASCAR designated pit stop boxes, and pit crew challenge results will also determine the pit picking order for the race weekend. Do you want to take the next couple paragraphs, Sharon?
Yeah. I can do that. You get a drink of water because I know how it can dry out your throat. Okay, the pit crew with the fastest stop during the All-Star qualifying attempt with no penalties is the winner of the pit crew challenge. Timing lines are established one box behind and one box ahead of the NASCAR-designated pit stop boxes. Now, the pit crew challenge results will determine the pit picking order, so you can bet that every driver is hoping that their pit crew does very well. Now, Saturday night will feature a 2 60-lap heat races that will determine the starting lineup of the All-Star race among drivers already locked into the field. There will be an All-Star caution at lap 30 of each heat race, and teams must perform a four-tire pit stop at that time. The results of Heat 1 will establish the inside row, while the results of Heat 2 will establish the outside row. The action-packed weekend will conclude Sunday night with the All-Star Open and the All-Star Race. Now, drivers eligible for the NASCAR All-Star Race include those who've won a points event in either 23 or 24. Drivers who won the NASCAR All-Star Race have won a NASCAR All-Star Race and compete full-time, and drivers who've won the NASCAR Cup Series Championship and compete full-time. Drivers who've already clinched an All-Star Race spot include A.J. Allmendinger, Christopher Bell, Ryan Blaney, Chris Buescher, Kyle Busch, William Byron, Ross Chastain, Chase Elliott, Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski, Kyle Larson, Joey Logano, Michael McDowell, Tyler Reddick, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Daniel Suarez, Martin Truex Jr., and Shane Van Gisbergen. The All-Star Race will air live on Fox Sports 1, MRN Radio, and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio, with coverage beginning at 5 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, May the 19th. So whoever wins this weekend will add their name to that list if they haven't already won a race between last year and this year. So a lot to look forward to with both the Open and the All-Star Race, and I always enjoy the fan voting that takes place for this as well.
Yeah, always fun, and I don't know if anyone's seen it yet, but Justin Haley put out kind of a really cool video on why you should vote for him. I thought that was funny and entertaining and kind of a ploy on the presidential race and things like that. So really cool interactive stuff by Haley and his PR people to put that together. So maybe an early favorite for the fan vote there if he doesn't race his way in.
Okay. Now, NASCAR also announced this week a Hall of Fame class for 2025, Brian, and we've got some familiar names on this list as well.
So for sure, another big piece of news coming out this week. 15 nominees for the Hall of Fame class, along with 5 nominees the Landmark Award for Outstanding Contributions to NASCAR. So basically there will be 2 modern era candidates and 1 pioneer candidate that will be elected for the class of 2025. The pioneer ballot honors those whose careers began more than 60 years ago. And the modern era and Landmark Award nominees were selected by the nomination committee, which consists of representatives from NASCAR and the NASCAR Hall of Fame, track owners from major facilities and historic short tracks. The Honors Committee, largely comprised of Hall of Fame, Living Hall of Famers, Landmark Award winners, and Squire Hall Award winners, selected the Pioneer ballot. The Hall of Fame voting panel will meet in person to discuss and vote for the class of 2025 and the Landmark Award coming up on Tuesday, May 21st. And the winners of a NASCAR.com fan vote will comprise the final ballot tally. The fan vote is currently open and will close on May 19th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll run through those nominees very quickly. On the modern era ballot, we have Greg Biffle, the 2000 NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series champion and 2002 Xfinity Series champion. Neil Bonnett, who had 18 wins in the Cup Series, including consecutive Coca-Cola 600 victories. Tim Brewer, 2-time NASCAR Cup Series champion crew chief. Jeff Burton, with 21 Cup Series wins, including the Southern 500 and a pair of Coca-Cola 600s. Randy Norton, who built engines that won 9 championships across NASCAR's National Series. Carl Edwards, winner of 28 Cup Series races and the 2007 Xfinity Series champion. Harry Gant, also an 18-time Cup Series winner, including a pair of Southern 500 victories. Harry Hyde, 1970 NASCAR Cup Series championship crew chief. Ricky Rudd, who won 23 times in the Cup Series, including the 1997 Brickyard 400. And Jack Sprague, 3-time NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series champion. So 15 names there, most pretty well known to a lot of NASCAR fans. And we'll flip over quickly to the Pioneer ballot. 5 people eligible there on the Pioneer ballot. Ray Hendrick, who won over 700 times in NASCAR Modified and Late Model Sportsman Competition. Banjo Matthews, who built cars that won more than 250 Cup Series races and 3 titles. Ralph Moody, 2-time NASCAR Cup Series owner champion as a mechanical genius of Holman Moody. Larry Phillips, the first 5-time NASCAR Weekly Series national champion. And Bob Melbourne, a 3-time convertible division champ. And for the Landmark Award, we've got 5 different individuals nominated here. Alvin Hawkins, who was actually NASCAR's first flagman and established NASCAR racing at the infamous Bowman Gray Stadium with Bill France Sr. Lisa France Kennedy, NASCAR Executive Vice Chair and one of the most influential women in all sports. Dr. Joseph Mattioli, the founder of Pocono Raceway. Dr. Dean Thicking, the inventor of the Safer Barrier, which should be an automatic win of the award there. That thing's been huge for the sport. Les Richter, longtime NASCAR executive who oversaw competition and helped grow the sport out on the West Coast. So some good stuff coming up there with the NASCAR Hall of Fame ballot announcement and the voting coming up in May, and those classes will be announced for 2025 thereafter. Flip it back over to Cher to talk about maybe not as exciting news from this week. We've got 2 great big announcements there, but now unfortunately we've got Eric Jones injured and a driver replacing him this week, Corey Heim.
Yeah, we've already kind of tapped on this one with Corey Heim stepping in to replace an injured Eric Jones at Dover. And Eric, as we all know, was involved in that multi-car incident at Talladega Super Speedway. And so Legacy Motor Club announced this week that Eric Jones will not race in the Worth 400 at Dover because of a compression fracture in his lower vertebrae of his back. Instead, they're tapping Corey Heim to pilot the famous number 43 Toyota this weekend. Heim is collaborating with the crew chief, David Elans, from Legacy Motor Club. And they have already requested, and I believe it's been granted, the medical waiver for Jones to remain eligible in the 2024 Cup Series playoffs. Although there's been no timeline for Jones to get back behind the wheel, he will be in attendance at Dover to help call the race with his crew. Heim, who is just 21 years old from Marietta, Georgia, right now competes in the Craftsman Truck Series for Tricon Garage and in the Xfinity Series for Sam Hunt Racing. So this is a great opportunity for Corey Heim. I wish Eric Jones a speedy recovery from his injuries. I know what it's like to have a back injury, and I know it can take some time. So I know he's in good shape, so hopefully he'll recover quickly.
Yeah, that I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but there was a video of the in-car floating around from that with the, kind of the scanner audio. You could just really feel like how brutal the hit that was for him and just hear it in his voice. So fortunate to hear, but glad that he's at least, you know, up and moving around, going to be at the racetrack. So obviously he's not in, in too much pain, and hopefully it's not too long of a timetable for recovery to see Eric back in the car. Some more news kind of related to Legacy Motor Club. Got the master of the Monster Mile, Jimmy Johnson, returning to race this weekend, obviously running a limited schedule these days with Legacy Motor Club that he also has part ownership of, obviously. He's won 11 times at Dover in the past, over 36 starts, with 18 top fives, 27 top tens, and three poles. Average finish of 8.656, is second best among all active drivers, and he holds a series best rank in pretty much all the loop categories of average running position, driver rating, laps in the top 15. In his last three starts at Dover, he's finished in the top 10 each time, including his last start there back in 2020 where he finished third. But this will be his first attempt at Monster Mile in the new next-gen car and also his first attempt behind the wheel of a Toyota with a completely different team. So we'll see how Johnson fares this weekend in a kind of a completely different look and feel for him. Obviously, the next-gen car handles vastly different than the car Johnson's used to dominating there in competition before. I'll hand it back over to Sharon to kind of give us a little bit of a rundown of some stats and history of Dover Downs.
Okay, well, we've already mentioned that the nickname is the Monster Mile at Dover Motor Speedway. It's a one-mile concrete-paved oval located in Dover, Delaware, and will be the site of the NASCAR Cup Series race this weekend. It was originally known as Dover Downs International Speedway and hosted 105 Cup Series races dating back to July of 1969. The first Dover Motor Speedway Cup Series race was on July 6th of 69, and it was a 300-mile event that was won by NASCAR Hall of Famer Richard Petty, driving a Petty Enterprises Ford. He was at 115.772 miles per hour, or 2 hours, 35 minutes, and 28 seconds. Petty actually won the first two Cup Series events at the track. He won there in 69 as well as 1970. In total of those 105 Cup Series races at Dover Motor Speedway, they've given us 43 different pole winners and 39 different race winners. So we'll see if we can add to those totals this weekend.
Yeah, for sure.
I was going to say we'll move on to the qualifying rewind.
Yeah, so front row is the place to start at Dover. Of the 22 different starting positions on the grid that have led to victories at Dover, the outside front row is the most proficient starting spot in the field, producing more winners than any other spot. 20 winners, 19% of the races at Dover in the Cup Series have been won from that spot, and 9 Cup Series drivers have won from the pole or the first place starting position for 13 victories, totaling 12.38% of the races at the track. 43 different drivers have won a pole at Dover in the past. Hall of Famer David Pearson's the leader in poles with 6, happening back in the 60s and 70s. Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin leads all active drivers in poles with 4, coming in 2012, 13, 15, and 19. And 8 of the 43 NASCAR Cup Series Dover Motor Speedway pole winners are active and in the field this weekend. As I mentioned, Hamlin with the 4, Jimmy Johnson and Martin Truex both with 3, and Chris Buescher, Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch, and Brad Keselowski all with 1 pole at Dover.
Okay. Okay, I was looking. I got ahead of myself there. Okay, Jimmy Johnson leads a stable of winners at Dover. He's an 11-time winner there, as we mentioned earlier, and holds the record for the most wins. And he will be one of 8 active drivers this weekend in the Cup Series race. So he's one of 5 drivers to win 10 or more races at a single track. He joins Richard Petty, who has 15 wins at Martinsville and North Wilkesboro, 13 wins at Richmond, and 11 wins at Rockingham, along with 10 wins at Daytona. Darrell Waltrip has 12 wins at Bristol, 11 wins at Martinsville, and 10 wins at North Wilkesboro. David Pearson has 10 wins at Darlington, while Dale Earnhardt has his 10 wins at Talladega Super Speedway. In total, 39 different drivers have won the Cup Series race at Dover. Of the 39 different Cup Series winners, 8 are active this weekend. 4 drivers have at least 1 win at Dover, dating from 2012 to 2021. They include Brad Keselowski with the 2012 win, Kyle Larson in 19, Denny Hamlin in 20, and Alex Bowman in 21. Chase Elliott has 2 wins at the track, coming in 18 and 22. Kyle Busch has 3 wins in 08, 10, and 17. Martin Truex has the 4 wins at the track in 07, 16, 19, and 23, the most recent winner. And Jimmy Johnson, those 11 wins came with an 02 sweep. He won there in 05. He had a sweep in 09. He won in 2010, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 17. I think that speaks for itself. This weekend's Worth 400 will be broken up into the 3 stages that we talked about earlier. And the Amtrak action begins Saturday, April the 28th, with practice at 10:30 a.m. Eastern, directly followed by Busch Light pole qualifying at 11:20 a.m., and both will be televised on Fox Sports 1. But actually, we've got a defending winner for us to watch this weekend.
Yeah, and that driver is none other than Martin Truex Jr. Well, he's ranked 2nd in his point standings at this point after 10 races into the season. He still has yet to visit victory lane, but as Sharon mentioned, is the defending winner at Dover. He returns looking for that first win, just 15 points back from the driver standing lead. He's the only driver in the top 5 in the point standings that has yet to visit victory lane in 2024. That could change this weekend, though. The 1 mile concrete track has been particularly good to him over the years. He's one of just 2 drivers to earn their first Cup Series victory at Dover, doing that back in 2007 and joining Jody Ridley, who did it back in 1981. Amongst the active drivers, Truex has the 2nd most wins at Dover with 4, and in his 33 career starts, he's had 10 top 5s and 19 top 10s with an average finish of 11.4. So a good opportunity for Truex to park that number 19 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota in victory lane this weekend and lock himself firmly into the playoffs for later on this year. And now Sharon can talk a little bit about the competition level that the next-gen car has been delivering
thus far in 2024.
Yeah, 2024 has been off to another very highly competitive start, and we'll take a look at some of those stats for the first 10 races. This season is just the third time that the Cup Series has produced 300-plus lead changes at 312. Through the first 10 races of the season, they had 343 in 2011 and 329 in 2010. This year's 31.2 average lead changes per race is the third most in the series through 10 races. That's behind the 2011 season with 34.3 and the 2010 season at 32.9. Now, this season, the Cup Series has produced 37 different lap leaders through the first 10 races. That's the series' most different lap leaders since 2011, when we had 39. The season is also averaging 12.9 lap leaders per race, which is the most since 2011 at 13.9. The average margin of victory in the Cup Series was at Talladega Super Speedway at 0.208 seconds. That's 208 thousandths of a second. The second closest margin of victory in the series this season, just behind that three wide Atlanta Motor Speedway finish at 0.003 thousandths of a second. Six of the 10 Cup races this season have resulted in a margin of victory of less than a second, which is pretty impressive. The 24 Talladega Super Speedway race gave us 315 green flag passes for the lead. That's the series most for the spring Talladega race and the second most ever recorded since the inception of the Loop Data Stat in 2005. Last season's October Talladega playoff race holds the all-time single-event Cup Series record at 348 green flag passes for the lead. The 24 Cup Series Talladega race produced 17,042 total green flag passes. That's the most for a race this season and the third most in the spring Talladega race since the inception of the stat in 2005. That's behind the 2014 number of 19,742 and the 2016 number at 18,058. So pretty impressive season so far in 2024.
I would agree, and I think along with that, we've now got a playoff picture that's starting to take a little bit more shape, 10 races into the season. Still 16 races left until those playoffs start, but we've got seven different drivers in a bend of victory lane and locked themselves in, and nine spots still up for grabs, either via another driver winning or via the final point standings for the regular season. Those seven drivers have already locked in: William Byron with three wins, Denny Hamlin with two wins, and then we've got Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Tyler Reddick, Christopher Bell, and Daniel Suarez, all firmly locked into their spot in the 2024 playoffs. On the other end of that playoff grid, two-time NASCAR Cup Series champion Joey Logano, still seeking that first win and on a pretty long winless streak, is 16th in the standings. He's actually tied with Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing's Chris Buescher in 17th, the first driver on the outside looking in on that postseason cutoff. And just behind Buescher in that 18th spot, kind of a surprise given that he adjusted pretty well to RCR in the early part of last year. That's two-time Cup Series champion Kyle Busch, 11 points back from both Logano and Busch. So taking kind of a quick look down those standings and how everyone's looking on the playoff grid, we've got the drivers without a win so far. We've got Truex Jr., Blaney, Ty Gibbs, Ross Chastain, Alex Bowman, Bubba Wallace, Chase Briscoe, Brad Keselowski, and Joey Logano, all currently in on points. And as we mentioned, Buescher, Kyle Busch, Austin Cindric is 53 points back from that cutoff. Eric Jones, 64 back from that cutoff, of course, being out injured. He will get that waiver, but he's most likely going to have to win a race to be able to get himself into the playoffs. Jones's teammate Carson Hocevar, 73 points back. And then we've got John Hunter Nemechek, Ryan Preece, Todd Gill, and then Ricky Stenhouse Jr. rounding out those top 25 in points. So There's currently 8 full-time Cup Series drivers that went to Victory Lane this weekend that are still looking for that first win this season, and those drivers are Buescher, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., the previous winner at Dover, Ryan Blaney, Ross Chastain, Joey Logano, Michael McDowell, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. So a long ways to go still, not even halfway through the regular season. But playoff picture starting to take a little bit of shape, but still up for grabs, and we still got, you know, a former two-time Cup Series champion in Busch on the outside looking in, and Joey Logano barely in. So a lot going on there. I think it's great to see Chase Briscoe up there. Obviously, Stuart Haas Racing has had some struggles, I feel like, the past couple of years. So he's currently locked into a playoff spot. That's good to see a little bit better performance there out of Briscoe in the number 14 team. So what do you think, Sharon? Any thoughts on the playoff picture thus far?
We got 3 more races to get to the halfway point, and then 3 races after that we'll be doing the 10-race countdown to the playoffs. It's up in the air. It's hard to say who's going to prevail. I'm going to withhold my pick until I get a better picture, I guess, because
sounds
I think
good.
It's up for grabs right now.
I would agree. A lot still to go.
Yep. All right. Let's take a look at who's going to perform this Sunday, April the 28th, out at Dover, and that's none other than American country singer and songwriter Tim Dugger, and his friends will entertain all the folks that are attending the race out at Dover this weekend. It's part of a Speedway Motorsports. It's part of a national tour of Speedway Motorsports venues this season. Tim Dugger and friends will crank up during the 9 race weekends of 2024. Dugger's Dover appearance will take place at the Monster Monument at Victory Plaza as part of the traditional free family fun entertainment offerings during the weekend this weekend. It's highlighted by the race on Sunday. So Dugger's racing and country music roots run really deep. He's an Alabama native and developed a passion for songwriting as he spent summers jamming with bluegrass pickers at his local music store. He later met NASCAR team owner Richard Childress. Dugger was hooked on America's most popular form of motorsports, and since then he's brought 2 passions together by performing his original songs and popular covers at racetracks all across the country. Now, Dugger's songs and his habit of bringing surprise guests onto the stage to share in the fun. So it'll be fun to see who he brings on stage with him this week, and I hope the fans have a good time listening to his music. But we've got some milestones to watch for, too.
Yeah, this is Dale Jr.'s favorite part, right? He loves all the recognition of milestones. some milestone starts coming up. Alex Bowman's making his 300th Cup Series start this weekend at Dover. He'll be the 102nd different driver in Cup Series history to make 300 or more starts. He made his first start way back at Daytona in 2014 and has kind of had a storied history here of driving for some of those small, more backmarker teams, BK Racing in 2014 and Tommy Baldwin in 2015, before he found that home at Hendrick Motorsports from 2016 on. Bowman has 7 career wins and 84 top tens, along with 4 poles, 12 starts at Dover in the past with 1 win in 2021 and 5 top fives. Also, another milestone start this weekend at Dover, Noah Gregson, his 50th start, driven for 2 teams thus far in his Cup Series career, Legacy Motor Club currently, obviously, or Legacy Motor Club last year, I should say, and Stuart Haas Racing currently, 49 previous starts. He has 2 top fives, 4 top tens. Obviously, struggled a lot last year, coming into his own a little bit more this year and set some more success. So we'll see if that continues, but he's making his 50th start this weekend. And then coming up, we've got some milestone starts in the next couple of weeks. Ross Chastain will make his 200th start at Darlington. Chase Elliott his 300th at Charlotte, along with Corey LaJoy making his 250th at Charlotte. When it comes to wins, we've got Denny Hamlin currently with 53 Cup Series wins, looking to tie NASCAR Hall of Famer Lee Petty for 12th on the all-time wins list with his next victory. Truex has 34 wins, and his next win would tie Brad Keselowski for 24th on the all-time wins list. Joey Logano, as mentioned earlier, on a pretty long winless streak, has 32 Cup Series wins. His next win will tie him for Fireball Roberts at 27th on the all-time list. And Kyle Larson, currently sitting at 24 Cup Series victories, his next win will tie him with Jim Paschal and Joe Weatherly for 34th on the all-time wins list. And when it comes to laps led, five drivers are looking to kind of reach a milestone number in laps led. That would be Jimmy Johnson, looking to get to 19,000. He needs to lead 59 more laps for that. Denny Hamlin needs to get to 15,000. He needs to lead 249 more for that. Joey Logano looking to get to 9,000. Needs to lead 320 more to that. Blaney, looking to get to 4,000 laps led, needs 222 more. And William Byron, looking to get to 3,000 laps led, needs 230 more. And if Johnson gets to that 19,000 laps led number, he'll just be the 10th driver all-time in Cup Series history to reach that feat. So a big number there for Johnson. See if he can get that done in his limited starts this year with 59 more laps out front.
Okay, let's see if we can get through these last two spots here. The next-gen competition stats since 22. So we'll see who's excelled most in the next-gen car since it was introduced. There's been 82 Cup Series points races since its introduction. The most championships is Team Penske with two, with Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney having one each. And the OEM championships is held by Chevrolet at two. Hendrick Motorsports has the most wins at 26. William Byron has 11 of those. And the manufacturer itself has 43 most wins. The most runner-up finishes, Hendrick Motorsports at 18, Tyler Reddick with 8, and Chevrolet with 37. The most top five finishes, Hendrick Motorsport once again at the top with 91, Kyle Larson with 32, and Chevrolet at 181. The most top 10 finishes is Joe Gibbs Racing at 151, Christopher Bell with 44 of those, and Chevrolet with 344. The most poles is Joe Gibbs Racing again at 22, Christopher Bell with 10, and Toyota at 26. The most top 10 starts, Hendrick Motorsports at 161, Kyle Larson with 55, and Chevrolet with 301. And then the most laps led, Joe Gibbs Racing at the top with 6,092, Kyle Larson with 2,293, and Chevrolet at 8,867. And I love this next segment where we're going to put a spotlight on crew members.
I agree. One of my favorites of the week from the notes here, as well as when Fox features them on the broadcast. I think that's pretty cool. And this week we've got some driver or some pit crew members from Delaware and New Jersey, all in Dover Motor Speedway or Dover, their home track. Asian Pugh, the jackman for Colleg Racing's number 16 team, hails from Wilmington, Delaware. And prior to joining the team as a jackman, he went to Rutgers University, where he was a linebacker on the football team, as well as studied engineering for his major. And then from New Jersey, we've got Steven Sharik, Front Row Motorsports rear tire changer on that number 38 car, hails from Tuckerton, New Jersey, and he's to attend the pit instruction and training prior to working in NASCAR. Milan Radonovic is the fueler for Trackhouse Racing's number 99 team of Daniel Suarez. He hails from Wantage, New Jersey, and prior to working in NASCAR, he also attended Rutgers, where he played college football. Ryan Flores, the front tire changer on Team Penske's number 12, is from Manasquan, New Jersey, and he attended Manasquan High School. Chris Pukas is the engine tuner on Team Penske's number 2 team. He's from Somerset, New Jersey. He went to Franklin High School before going to the University of Northwestern, Ohio, and he also drove a dirt modified for the student motorsports team at the University of Northwestern, Ohio. Cool little nugget there. And then Pat Gray is the jackman on Team Penske's number 2 team from Westfield, New Jersey. And prior to working in NASCAR, he attended Monmouth University, where he played college football. And for any newer NASCAR fans, it's a very common theme amongst pit crew members. A lot of them are former college athletes, oftentimes football linemen, linebackers, things like that, big, strong individuals that are out there carrying those tires, filling up the cars with fuel and jacking them up. But that's a very common career path or move that you'll typically see as athletes from college coming in over to NASCAR on picker teams?
All right, we did it. I wasn't sure we were going to make it through all of that information, but we did it, Brian, so thank you so much for that. we are ready for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off discussion. I believe it's just going to be you and I today. So where do you want to start? I think there's only three topics on our list, but we might have maybe more if you've got something else you want to talk about.
Well, I'm guessing you probably covered my head from last week on Monday's show. But that was the whole pylon discussion and the scoring pylon being down. I don't know if you want to give your thoughts on that quick to kick it off, or if you feel like you covered that adequately on Monday.
No, we can go ahead and talk about that. I feel like the pylon is kind of an iconic part of the racetrack. And 100%. As NASCAR fans, we don't like it when they change things up. I think it's easier for the drivers. I think it's easier for us as fans, especially if we're at the racetrack, to check up on that pylon to see where the drivers are in their positioning on the track. And so I think in some of the places where they've eliminated the pylon, I think they're expecting they've got the big screen TVs, and I think they're thinking that the fans and the drivers will be able to see it there instead. It's a big adjustment, and I don't know that it's any easier to see it on the TV than it is on the pylon. But I hate to see the pylons go in those tracks that are eliminating it. I know Dover is promoting this week that they are gearing up to turn their pylon on this week, so fans are excited about that. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I did see that. I mean, it's just kind of baffling to me because, I mean, I've been at tracks that have the screens and they're showing the broadcast, and sure, you could put some stuff up there. I think we saw people posted some photos from Talladega that had, you know, the top five or whatever kind of shown in a banner across the screen, but I mean, that's not what you want. You want to be able to look up there quick and be like, all right, where's my driver? Well, I was running 17th. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. I mean, anyone, whether you're a team member, a media member, an official, a track worker, a fan, everybody and their brother is looking up at that pylon multiple times during the weekend. And I don't think the solution at all is, well, you can pull up the NASCAR app and look at timing and scoring. Well, okay, maybe. And I know track Wi-Fi has gotten a lot better over the years, but I mean, track Wi-Fi at a lot of tracks is still a pretty big struggle, not to mention if you're encouraging even more people to be on it, much less a lot of times I don't want to look down at my phone during the race. I want to have my scanner in my ears. I want to be looking out at the track, and I want to be watching the racing and being able to look up and see where my driver is. And I know we're also trying to bring in, you know, newer and younger fans, but let's not forget our current fan base. Some of them aren't really big smartphone users. I mean, my dad and his friends are huge NASCAR fans. They love to go to races. Like, I don't think they even have the NASCAR app, right? So he doesn't want to download mm-hmm. another app on his phone. He wants to look at the darn scoring pylon, you know? And I feel like that's just, you know, so I was super fired up about it until I think it was on Monday. I heard a little segment from Gluck and Bianchi's The Teardown. And I guess they were saying these pylons cost like $5 million, which
sounds
like both, I mean, and then they're both very reputable reporters. I'm sure they're not just throwing out numbers that they don't have from pretty good sources. So I feel confident that that is a pretty accurate number, but that is just a little bit mind-blowing to me that that's goddamn expensive. So it changes my mind a little bit, but and I know we all need to change and adjust to different things, but I don't think you're going to find anything better than the scoring pylon. And as you mentioned too, even the word iconic, right? It's just a staple at every major NASCAR Cup Series racetrack, you know, and it's hard to mm-hmm. follow the rest of the race without it. You know, an example, your short tracks don't have scoring pylons, obviously, but Slinger, they just show the top five on a board. Like, I got to pull up race monitor, and that's kind of annoying, but like that makes a little bit more sense when you're at a shorter track. Obviously, they're not throwing out $5 million for a scoring pylon, but I just feel like anytime you're at a Cup Series track, you need that. So disappointing to see. I'm thinking that maybe the feedback and outrage will get them to reconsider that in some cases, or just like anything, we all, I guess, eventually adjust and adapt. I can think of numerous changes over the years that everyone was fired up about and thought was ridiculous and ended up being okay. It's just a little bit crazy to me, but I guess I think it all comes down to dollars and cents at the end of the day.
Absolutely, and that's what I was going to follow up with. You were reading my mind there, and I mentioned this on Monday too. You know, I had a 2007 Ford 500 that was running great. I had it for quite a few years, and I tell you, when I hit a deer last November coming back from Texas from the Thanksgiving holiday, I ended up totaling the car. And one of the main reasons it was totaled is because it's an older model that's no longer being made, and they don't make parts for it anymore. And that's part of what's happening here, I think, with the scoring pylon, is that from my understanding is not only is it hugely costly to replace, even to replace a part is difficult because there are parts that are no longer being made for those scoring pylons, and thus it's next to impossible to replace a part to make it less expensive when the parts are no longer being made. So that is all, as you pointed out, needs to be taken into consideration as we get a little bit upset about another change within our NASCAR world. You're right, we do kind of learn how to adapt, even though we don't like it at the time. When all is said and done, we have to make that time to adapt. So I think that's probably what's going to happen in this case too, because $5 million is a lot of money to replace a scoring pylon. And as much as we would love for somebody to step in and say, I'll pay the $5 million to replace it, if you're talking about all the different tracks that we race at and eventually a scoring pylon going out, that adds up to a lot of money. So I think this might be one of those situations where what we might wish for may not come to pass, and we might have to end up making that that time to adapt to the situation as it is. So maybe they'll come up. Maybe somebody will come up with a new solution that's solar powered.
Well, it's going to be my next thing too. It's like, I don't know if there's a way they could create something that's transportable from track to track that they can, construct.
Cool.
It just kind of travels as part of NASCAR's deal. Obviously those things are pretty big structures and you can't just throw up something like that super quick all the time, but you would think with, different stuff, maybe there's some sort of thing they can design, and then it's just something that, NASCAR owns, and it just goes with them from track to track and gets set up with all the other equipment and stuff that gets lugged all across the country throughout the season. Now, that sounds simple to sit here on my couch or at my desk and say that. I'm sure that also would be very costly and maybe even impossible to design something that's able to do that and be put up in, a quick time frame and deconstructed in a quick time frame. But yeah, I don't know. Or more screens that can show the whole field at a time. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you said, I think eventually we'll adapt. Is what it is. But I don't know. I feel like I don't want to have my phone out looking at it to see where everybody is running. But there's often times where I just want to know where someone's at, especially when you have Larson or somebody gets a penalty and you want to follow him back up through the field. Where's he at? Well, okay, I can only see the top five on the screen. I don't know. Is he in 25th? Is he in 14th? I don't really know. Especially at, a little mile and a half, so they get to try out a little bit more, maybe a little bit easier to follow. But at a shorter track, kind of difficult to keep up with. But even if they scroll 5 or 10 positions at a time, by the time it scrolls back around, that could change 3 or 4 times. So I don't know. I don't know. And again, I don't know if this is just going to be, these couple of tracks where it's happened, or if that's going to be a thing we start seeing everywhere, don't really know. Don't know what they can do. Don't know if they can take the pylon that's just sitting out here at Chicagoland and put out one of these tracks that they're using. Cause it's just sitting there decaying currently as well. Right. So, I don't know. I don't know if there's an easy solution, but I hope that maybe it's just these couple of tracks right now, but you made a good point, and I saw the same this week too, that like they just, when they bought all these things back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, they don't make the parts for them at all anymore. So even if you wanted to repair it and spend, you know, $10,000 or whatever it might cost for a part, you cannot get the part anywhere. So, and you, great example you use with the car, right? Like sometimes they don't make parts for it anymore. So it's basically it's done. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Yeah, but usually when something like that, it's because there's a newer, better, more efficient way to do it. And it doesn't seem like the newer way now is a better, more efficient way, in my opinion. Stop. Are you on mute, Chan?
Brian?
Yeah, are you still there?
Brian, yeah, I'm here. I did get knocked out. I had to call back in.
Gotcha. So. Okay. We're real quiet, so I was like either we're on mute or, yeah.
Nope.
Got disconnected.
Nope, I got kicked out. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, I agree with you. I wish there was some answer that I hope somebody's sitting down and brainstorming like we were just doing now, coming up with different solutions for how they might be able to still get a scoring pylon up at Texas or the other tracks that they don't have it. But I will have to wait and see how NASCAR plays this out, but I can certainly appreciate the cost that's involved. And I think with technology being what technology is, I think they can probably come up with a solution that's better than us trying to see it on our phones or trying to see it on the TV, because the TV just doesn't do it justice. And I hope they come up with a good solution that makes it easier for fans to keep track of where their driver is in that scoring position. So we'll see what happens. But you bring up some really good ideas, Brian.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if any of them are a great solution, but hopefully it hopefully some changes, or we don't see them starting to go away at a lot more tracks at this point. But I think to your point with parts not being around and not being able to do maintenance and upkeep, and we're starting it happening more and more at various tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sad in a way. What's our next hot topic going to be?
Let's see. I mean, I guess we kind of covered a little bit already in our detailed review of it, but do we want to talk a little bit about All-Star race, tires, how we think that is? We think the All-Star is a good format to do that in?
Yeah, I kind of do think it's a good format. It's a non-points-paying race. It's a chance for the drivers to test out different tire compounds, I guess, if you can put it, in order to maybe address the whole short track package that has been challenging for them with this next gen car, and I think it does give the dynamic of strategy for a lot of these teams in how they're going to strategize for their drivers to win the Open and the All-Star race. I do like that they're color coding the tire, so we can figure out which tires which teams are running at any given time based on that color coding. And I think it makes it easier for the drivers, too. Hopefully it does, for them to pick the right tire to put on the cars at any given time. So, and you know, in relationship to what we were just talking about with the scoring pylon, I like that NASCAR is kind of exploring more with the wet tire package as well, because it's very, very costly for them to carry those jet dryers around from track to track in case of rain. And they've come up with another solution, and that's helping the drivers learn how to race that wet tire package. So they're prepared to put on a race, rain or shine, and I like that they're moving in that direction. What are your thoughts, Brian?
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity to test these different things in an actual race format, right? You can go out and do so many tire tests, but honestly, they don't really simulate the actual race itself, right? When you're out there with 40 other competitors and everything's going on and all the different strategies that could potentially play out and how that would affect the race, you know, how that affected the decision-making, what do all drivers think, right? Tire tests normally only have one driver from each manufacturer, so you're not getting everyone's take and opinion. And I think when it comes to all-star races across all of professional sports these days, like none are really that exciting or that enticing anymore, right? The NFL has pretty much done away with theirs and just kind of done these different like flag football type competitions. The NBA, they play no defense. The score is like 1,000 to like 950, and like no one really seems to care. Baseball still seems kind of meaningless. Same thing with hockey. Like they don't really move the needle or don't really have a reason to tune in. I think this, you know, North Wilkesboro last year gave a reason because, shit, they hadn't raced there in forever. And I think this gives a reason of, all right, let's see how these tires do, right? Bristol had a tire that wore out a little too much, depending on who you ask. But, like, that led to some great activity and great racing there. So I think, all right, what is this going to do? How is that going to change the strategy? I think it'll be interesting. I think the interesting part will be, you know, the broadcast will need to do a really good job helping explain that and drive that home as well. Just with that, it's probably a lot of those pit reporters. I'm not jealous of that at all. There's probably a lot going on as teams try different strategies and different things. But I think it's something that's unique. And I think that, you know, gives a reason to tune into the all-star race. Whereas across a lot of other professional sports, there's not as much of a reason. So I think it's a good opportunity to test it under non-points paying conditions. And if it's a disaster, it's a disaster. And if stuff works and they can apply it to other races this year, then great.
Okay. I don't have a whole lot to add. I am kind of curious to see how each of these tires perform on a track like North Wilkesboro. And I think it is a track that has an abrasive surface, although did they do any resurfacing there yet, Brian? Do you know?
I think they repaved North Wilkesboro for this year, if I remember right. I might be confusing it, but I think they did.
Okay. Well, yeah, that'll give another little wrinkle in all of this with the repave then on how these different tires perform at that track. So it's going to be fun to watch. Like you say, I think it gives a lot of fans a reason to tune in and to see how all of that plays out and how every team manages their tires and manages the event. They say that the softer tire gives them a little bit of a competitive advantage, at least for a while. It allows them to go fast, but it also eats up the tire, which means that they're going to have more pit stops. So I do think that it's going to be interesting to see what the different teams do and how they manage all of that. The prime tire is the one that lasts a little bit longer and will require fewer tire changes, but does not give them the grip that the softer tire gives them. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm looking forward to it coming up just in a couple weeks already. I can't believe we're already heading into the month of May.
I know. It's hard to believe. Okay, what next topic do we want to hit on here? We've kind of covered both of these in our preview part of the show, but is there anything more that you have to say about either one of the next two topics?
I mean, I don't think I have much else on the Hall of Fame nominees. I think, you know, it's always – I think the tough part is the voting, right, coming down to who do you vote out of all of them, right? There's a lot of good names, a lot of deserving individuals, but obviously you don't want to just let – anybody in. There's a reason why it's an honor and a privilege to be in the Hall of Fame class. So I think it'll be interesting to see who gets voted. I think it's probably a tough call to make. Obviously, they get a lot of data, a lot of information, and have discussions around it. It's not just a willy-nilly process. But, definitely a tough call. We read out a lot of good names there. I think a lot of drivers kind of coming up for eligibility now that were, you know, drivers in my younger years. When you look at, you know, I guess Carl Edwards isn't even that long ago, but it seems like long ago now. Some of those drivers getting the chance to be nominated is kind of cool to see.
And then when it came to like the Landmark Award, I think you got five individuals there that you could argue all five of them deserve it, right? So tough call, and not one I have to make.
Yeah. You know, we talked about the fan vote in the All-Star race. There's a fan vote that's involved with the Hall of Fame nominees as well. So that always adds a little bit of fun to it for the fans. And, again, we're voting now, and the committee is getting together to kind of make their recommendations. So it's going to be fun to see how it plays out. They usually induct whoever the nominees end up being, and who the actual Hall of Fame class is. They're usually inducted at the end of January, so just before the next season starts. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they've done a good job so far, so I have no reason to believe that they won't continue to do a good job of putting the right people into this class for the 2025 season.
Yes, I would agree. Be fun to watch another thing coming up in May to see when that's announced. So good month we're looking forward to.
Absolutely. And, of course, the last topic here, we talked about Erik Jones being out with that compression fracture that he experienced at the race last week at Talladega. And Corey Heim is going to fill in for him indefinitely, I guess, until they're going to take it race by race. But while Erik Jones is out, this is an opportunity for Corey Heim to get some seat time. He's done well in the NASCAR Cup Series. It's going to be interesting to see how he does in the next-gen car. You mentioned earlier that he's been doing a lot of sim racing and testing for the Cup Series teams. So this is his chance to actually get behind the wheel, and we'll see how he does. Erik Jones, I feel for him. I'm a person who's had a back injury and had to take quite a bit of time to recover from a back injury. So I kind of feel for Erik Jones. It's no fun, but it seems like he's handling it well. And I really wish for him a very speedy recovery. So it'll be good to have him back behind the wheel of the number three when he does return. He's had some good runs this season.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, first year with Toyota for them, Jimmy Johnson and the ownership group now, a lot of changes going on at Legacy Motor Club, John Hunter Nemechek being his new teammate over there. So I think a lot of change going on, and I think Jones is getting a chance to kind of adapt to that. Hopefully this injury doesn't keep him out for too long. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Heim performs. Obviously he's done really well at the Truck Series level, got a little bit of Xfinity Series experience. I don't believe he's actually been behind the wheel in any sort of test of the next-gen car on an actual track, just in simulator time. But he is, as we mentioned, the Toyota simulator driver, so he's definitely probably turned a lot of laps in simulators so far this year, so a little bit of experience under his belt, but definitely a tall task, and I don't feel like Dover is probably the easiest of tracks to come in and make your debut at either, but at least he's got the 11-time winner there, Jimmy Johnson, in his organization to maybe lean on and get a little bit of thoughts and advice from, so maybe that'll give him a little bit of a leg up. Obviously not the situation where he'd want to be making his debut due to an injury, but a good opportunity for him to show what he can do and further his career. And hopefully it's just for a short period of time until Erik is fully healthy and back in the car.
Yeah, I agree. I'm anxious to see what Corey Heim does, but at the same time, I'll be happy to see Erik Jones back on track when he heals. So I'm glad that they're supporting him and taking the time that he needs to heal his back. And I believe NASCAR has already granted the waiver for Erik Jones to be playoff eligible should he get a win before the end of this season. And that might be a tall order for Erik Jones too, because I'm sure when he does come back, I know for me, the idea of getting behind, I wanted to do the racing experience, but after I broke my back, I kind of second-guessed myself whether I wanted to put myself through that with a broken back of racing in a, you know, driving a car on the track and going through those bumps that, because it's not as smooth as it looks on TV. Those guys are bouncing around in that car. And so making sure he's comfortable is going to be a task for his team as well, especially with that broken back. So I'm glad they're taking the time that's needed.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, it's a very valid point. It's definitely not as smooth as it may look on TV inside those cars. I'm sure you've been on some pace car rides, Sharon, around racetracks, and they're definitely pretty darn bumpy and a lot more movement going on inside there than you might think or expect, no doubt.
Yeah, and those pace car rides are not going, you know, as fast as they go on the racetrack in
no.
a race car. So, yeah.
No.
I mean, it's a good experience, and I love doing it. But when you're going as fast as they're going, it's a whole different outlook. I will say Eric Jones is one of my favorite drivers, though, when it comes to I remember this at Chicagoland Speedway when I was at the racetrack when everybody was complaining about the bump over in turn three. And Eric Jones ended up winning that race, and I asked him about it because – everybody was complaining about those bumps, and Eric Jones gave the best answer of the weekend as far as I'm concerned. When everybody else was frustrated with that bump over in turn three, Eric Jones said, "It's my job to figure out how to navigate that bump to the best of my ability, and that's what I set out to do." And I always admired him for giving that answer. Because I saw a lot of frustration from a lot of drivers throughout the weekend because of that bump in turn three. And so I think he gave the absolute best answer that his job was to figure out how to navigate it and make it work for him versus making it a challenge.
Yeah,
okay, are you still with me?
Covered that one pretty good.
Okay.
Anything else hot topic-wise you want to touch on?
Yeah, I was just going through here to look to see if there's any other thing. There is a note here on J-Skis that kind of caught my eye, if you don't mind. It says, this was posted earlier today. Could NASCAR add an additional stage to Super Speedway races? What are your thoughts about that possibility, having four stages on super speedways?
I mean, I guess if it helps them not just ride around 15 miles an hour below what they could go at, maybe. I don't know that I'm a fan of adding another caution necessarily, although maybe that gives a little bit more chance for commercial breaks and we see a little bit more live racing. So I don't think I'm against it necessarily, but I also don't necessarily like when the rules are different, like week after week for different places, right? It's just more to understand for the casual fan, like, why does this race have four stages and this race has three stages and things like that, obviously, gets a little bit maybe confusing or harder to explain to newer fans. So I don't know. I feel like I'm on the fence. If they did it, I'd be fine with it. And if they didn't do it, I think I'm also fine with it. But I wasn't really a fan of how Talladega played out. I mean, I'm glad that it came down to a good race at the end. But I just feel like, I mean, especially the driver, just riding around out there and saving fuel at a place like Talladega just has to suck. And it's so counterintuitive to what you want to do and what you're trained to do. So I would be okay with it if, you know, if they thought that would maybe change up the fuel game. What about you?
Okay, I had myself on mute there, so I had to take it off. I do applaud NASCAR for looking for a solution. The most recent change suggested by the garage, if a change is to be made, is that the fourth stage would eliminate the need to save fuel. It would also eliminate green flag pit stops, a key competitive variable. When asked earlier if that was on the table, Elton Sawyer said, I don't think there's anything that's off the table. We look at it as we do want to take fuel mileage completely out of the event. And sure, we could do that, but we could do that with where we put stage brakes. But does that add to the entertainment value of super speedways? Does that take away from it? I'm sure there are fans that, for the most part, enjoyed what they saw on Sunday, and there are those that have a different view. And then later on SiriusXM, Elton Sawyer once again, once drivers started racing for stage and race wins, it became incredibly hard to pass. So those are the factors that Sawyer said NASCAR needs to consider when pondering any potential rule changes for future super speedway races. With all that being said, Sawyer says, we are looking at it, and we feel like there needs to be a change. I don't know that there is a fix. We can look at things in collaboration with our TV partners and our teams to make a change if we all feel that we need to, Sawyer said. But again, Sawyer urged that any changes would result in a new unintended consequence, and that the history of the sport is full of those examples. And I think that that is true. Sometimes when we try to fix one thing, we end up creating another problem. And so I applaud him for recognizing that and taking the time to look at it from all sides. So I don't know. I'm okay with fuel strategy races. I know that it's frustrating sometimes if your driver's on the wrong side of that fuel strategy, but it is part. Everybody has the same playing field, if you will, when it comes to that. So it's whichever team is able to maximize their strategy for the best result that's going to end up winning. I think at tracks like super speedways, they've got to do something, though, to make the racing more entertaining for fans. He's right. I think that there are some fans that look at those races and find them entertaining as they are. But there's always that group of fans that are not happy unless there's some kind of other type of action, I'll just put it that way, that's taking place during a race. So
yeah.
It's a hard place to be in for NASCAR, I think, and especially for the reason that Elton Sawyer brings up. When you look to address one thing, sometimes
yeah.
you come up with a solution yeah. that gives you unintended consequences,
yeah.
and then people
right.
complain about that. So
yeah,
it's
no
going to be fun to see what they come up with.
Right. No different than any of our jobs, right? You fix one thing and you think that's the right thing, and before you know it, you realize fixing one thing caused three other problems. So I do feel for NASCAR in a lot of cases, that's kind of a tough one, right, with how this has played out with racing at super speedways. It's just weird, right? For a while, the mile-and-a-half races sucked, right? Everyone wanted to fix those. Well, I feel like the next-gen cars made the mile-and-a-half racing better than it was, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And now the short-track racing isn't that great, and now the super speedway racing is different and people don't like it. It's, man, I don't know. Like, I wish I was a super smart engineer and I could figure out all the problems when it comes to motor sports, but I'm not. So I guess I'll sit here and complain and analyze it with everyone else. But yeah, I think, I don't know what you do. I guess that's a potential easy solution to maybe fix it, but who knows what the unintended consequences of that could potentially be. I don't know. I'm torn.
Yeah, I am too. I'm torn over it. And engineers, they try to anticipate all the potential problems, but their job is to come up with the solution. And it's not always easy. I know sitting from our perspective, we think it should be easier than what it probably is. It's gonna take some time for NASCAR to really evaluate and kind of try to the best of their ability to anticipate what some of those unintended consequences might be, but you and I both know that you can't anticipate every single unanticipated consequence. So it's going to be interesting how NASCAR addresses it. I'm one of the people that was somewhat okay. I'm not a big fan of super speedway racing anyway, but I like the idea of having tire wear and fuel strategy and everybody having that same same playing field, if you will, and whoever figures it out the best should be the ones that end up winning those races. So for me, I think that just adds a different dynamic to it and makes it more interesting. When you look at, I always get a kick out of people saying, what do you get out of watching these cars go round and round in circles? It, to me, there is so much more to it than just going around in a circle. And fuel strategy, tire wear, team dynamics, those are all part of the equation for me when it comes to racing.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, since moving last year from Illinois to Wisconsin, I've made some new friends and met more people. And a lot of people were like, yeah, I didn't even realize, like, the cars were different or this was different or that they go to these tracks or that they race here or, you know, just I think there's a lot about it that people just don't know or understand or realize or see what goes into it. So it's been kind of fun, you know, chatting with new people about motorsports and got some a little more interest in a few more people want to go to some races. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too. Me too, Brian. Okay, let's see if I see anything else that we could talk about here. I just have to get the computer to I hate these little pop-up things that come up. You think you're reading one thing and something else pops up and you're completely somewhere you did not intend to be. When do you think Brad Keselowski is going to break through? He's had 2 second place finishes in a row here. Is he due up next for a win?
I mean, he could be. I feel like he continues to just be right there. At places even outside the super speedways, I feel like he's starting to come in his own over there at RFK, and I think that would be huge, right? I think how can you not root for that? You know, he took the risk, went over there in team ownership, now going to be part of the sport for years to come, even when he's done driving now. And I think that was pretty cool to see. And while we're kind of talking about owners getting wins, I'm sure being from the Chicagoland area, you were also pretty excited to see Michael Jordan in victory lane last weekend. Obviously, the team's won before since he's been an owner, but that was the first time he's actually been at the track for it. And I really thought that was just fun to see his level of excitement come through in the interview with Jamie Little and just some of the videos you've seen of him getting the chance to celebrate with Bo, Tyler's son, and Tyler and the team. Really cool to see, and I think good for the sport, too. And, you know, just hearing from some of my friends in the Chicagoland area, I still get the Chicagoland stations, too, so turning on the news and stuff. And, that made all the news all around, right, where normally they don't even talk about NASCAR outside of everyone hating on the Chicago street race last year. NASCAR hasn't gotten a lot of press in the Chicagoland area, I don't feel like. So I thought that was pretty cool, and I think just kind of piques the interest of, you know, Jordan fans, sports fans, Chicago people, and ideally other athletes that might say, hey, maybe I want to be part of this ownership stuff too. This is cool. So I was a big fan.
Yeah, I loved watching Michael Jordan play basketball, but I think he ruined basketball for me. I had a hard time watching basketball after that team broke up. It just wasn't the same. But it was very cool to see him at the track, to see 2311 get their victory and be able to celebrate with them. He had the Tyler Reddick's son, Bo, spending some time with him to enjoy that celebration. And I don't even know if Bo really understands who Michael Jordan is. But it was really, really cool to see Tyler Reddick's win last week at Talladega and to see Michael Jordan be able to celebrate. That's the first time he's been at the track when they have won a race. So a very cool milestone there. But I would like to see that happen. I know it's not on the same level as having Michael Jordan as a co-owner, but I think Brad Keselowski has done a really good job of making the transition over at RFK Racing and doing what they were hoping he would do by going over to that organization, and that is to step up their game. And I think he's accomplished that. Chris Buescher's had some good runs. Brad Keselowski's had some good runs. He acknowledges that they have a little more work to do to kind of get them into victory lane. But the Fords in general, if you look at who's won the races this season, it's been Chevrolet and Toyota. Ford has yet to kind of crack into the victory lane for this season, and I think it's been a little while since Ford last won. So Joey Logano is an example, too. He's driving a Ford. So they've gone through some changes, if you will. They're working to improve their program. And I think Brad Keselowski's been a big part of that. So I think it's going to be a huge celebration when he's able to win a race, or any Ford for that matter, wins a race in the NASCAR Cup Series. It's going to be a big deal for Ford to finally crack that nut.
Yeah, maybe when Brad gets that big first victory as an owner, he'll drink from a beer glass as big as he did when he won the championship in 2012. So, no, he's not sponsored by Miller Lite anymore, but maybe he's still got a glass that size laying around somewhere. He can celebrate that way. But, yeah, I think that'll be cool. I think that'll be a great celebration when that day does come. Yeah, it's crazy, though, that we're sitting here in 10 races into the season and Ford has yet to come to get to victory lane. It's pretty much been Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing dominating it week after week and leading most of the laps and getting the win. So it'll see if anyone has anything for them. But as we know, all it takes is to get hot at the right time once you get down to the playoffs. You got to get in the playoffs first, and then those last 10 races are what it really comes down to. So if Ford struggles early on, it doesn't necessarily matter as much if they're able to pick it up for the second half of the season and the playoffs when it really counts. But, yeah, it's kind of crazy that – you know, Joey's been so long since he's been to victory lane that we haven't seen, you know, Blaney or somebody else in the Ford camp get into victory lane this year. So it's been a tough year for them, but I'm sure they're going to work on it and they're going to get there.
They're going to get there, no doubt about it. So I don't have anything else unless you do, Brian.
No, I think I'm good.
Okay, well, then we'll call that pretty much it. Do you want to give your handles and do your sign-off?
Yeah, Brian Eberle, best way to follow Twitter, still Twitter, always Twitter, beeberle18. So no racetrack for me yet this weekend, but I think I'm heading down to Kansas Speedway for next weekend's festivities down there. So looking forward to that.
Nice, I like it. I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio on Facebook, as well as our website at fanforracing.com, where we have our player for all of our radio shows. So always a pleasure doing the preview show with you, Brian. I think next week might be our last week. I think next week is race number 12 that we're previewing. So I think Jay should be back sometime in May there. So I'm definitely thinking we're coming to a close here as far as you and I doing the preview shows. And I really appreciate all of the effort that you put into it. And it's been a lot of fun doing that with you.
Yeah, it has been fun. I'll be happy to be part of Hot Topics on a Thursday basis. It's always a fun hour. So looking forward to still being part of that. And, yeah, filling in when needed, but it'll be great to have Jay back in the normal Thursday time slot.
Okay. And definitely looking forward to the racing this weekend. This I know on Friday I've been invited to Special Persons Day at my granddaughter's school, St. Andrew's Lutheran School in Park Ridge. So I'm looking forward. I'm going to be leaving sometime this afternoon so that I can be there for Special Persons Day along with her Aunt JoJo. And we're going to take her out for lunch afterwards. So I think I'm looking forward to that the most. And then, of course, the racing after that. So we'll look forward to talking about the racing again on Monday night with Sal Segala as we do the review show. And, Brian, you're always welcome to join us on Monday nights for Hot Topics as well. And if you can make it, we'd always love to have you.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. And have a great weekend, everybody.
Okay. Take care. We'll talk to you on the other side.
Bye.